So I was, since I missed so much, so many shows, did Ion ever, Ion has said how Bitcoin's going to zero. Has Ion ever suggested another cryptocurrency or token that might have any kind of a fighting chance?
I don't remember. I don't
think it's like a shitcoin or something.
Just the drops.
Just Dogecoin, yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned Dogecoin, yeah. But I don't know if it's...
It's going up now. It was 5 cents, and now it's up to 14 just within the last week.
Wow.
Because okay. Elon took over Twitter, probably.
Yeah.
There was speculation, yeah. He's going to implement payments on Twitter, so Twitter will be one way you can send people money. And there was speculation that he would use Dogecoin, so it's probably related to that.
Well, Ion has said that it's supposed to go up to $3 at some point, but recently at that time, you know, it could be $10 million to buy a Big Mac, so.
True. Yeah, that's the thing. Are the cryptocurrencies' values going up, or is it just because the dollar's value is decreasing?
Yeah, I mean, Linda, has anyone heard of any cryptocurrency being a sure bet like SO? You know, Ion, I've never heard of Ion talking about a cryptocurrency in the way that they talk about SO. It just always seems to fall back
SO?
To the value.
Southern Company.
Oh, Southern Company, yes, okay.
Ion says that JW doesn't go to bed at night without getting out of the crypto. So if he went into crypto in the morning, he would be out of it in that evening.
Right, right.
You know what's strange? No, what's just strange is that in October, the pound was tanking against the dollar, the euro, and the Swiss franc. And now it's going back up where it was in October. But it's really quiet since they named the new prime minister as far as what's going on. Really quiet. Nothing in the headlines. So there's a lot, because since Ion said that the you know, the three pillars of London, the Vatican, and USA Inc. have fallen. So it's really interesting what's,
And how the prices of the pound, the dollar, and the euro crossed, they all crossed each other on the 24th, well, since the 24th.
Yes. But
it's really cool because when we first started.
Go ahead.
When we first started doing the Forex triangulation. And I was trying to tweak the formula. And the first thing that happened was I came back to Ion. I'm like, Ion fucked up. Like, for example, Ion, I just triangulated the euro would go down to zero. And they're like, no, there might be something. We're telling you that's going to happen. And that was in 2011. So here we are on that. And the other thing was I triangulated the pound. And I don't know, just in my obliviousness, if I wasn't paying attention to Brexit, but was it, when the referendum happened, the value of the pound temporarily, like, got hammered. Like, it went way down. But anyways, I had triangulated again prior to that, maybe a couple months earlier, that pound would go a lot down. To the point where I thought the formula was fucked up. I'm like, there's something wrong with the formula. It's not working. There's no way the pound is going to lose, like, whatever that was, 30% in one,
day. Yeah.
And it didn't happen. It didn't happen within the 14-day window that I was trying to calculate. It happened, you know, probably like 90 days later, but it still happened. So.
So you were able to use the Forex formula. I think there was some speculation on whether you were able to figure that out or not.
Yeah, but knowing that the pound is going to go down 30% 14 days from now versus 90 days is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, sure. Like,
it worked for us to sit around and comment on how Ion was right, but it wouldn't work for me if I was putting money on it for a trade.
Right.
In that particular case. And then because the triangulation formula involves the traveler, apparently triangulating a future value also has an effect on it. It's like the double slit experiment. The results are different if you're measuring. If you're watching or observing, the results of the experiment are different than if you're not watching.
Right.
So there's a whole slew of other adjustments that have to be made to account for that, for yourself, sort of changing the outcome by measuring.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so do it, but don't observe the result. So if you don't observe
that's the
result.
Never mind.
Yeah.
They told me last payday, we said never mind, and the tech body took it seriously. They did it. We perfected. Mm-hmm. Never mind. Now that's where they are.
Mm. Yeah, that makes me wonder. A lot of times, Ion will make predictions or used to, and they wouldn't come true. And I started to realize that it's because by speaking to us and us doing whatever we do with it, with our mind, that we're changing the outcomes.
That's what they said in the very beginning. They said, if someone asked, I'm like, can you make a prediction? They said, no, we can't predict because whatever we say, once you know it, you're going to change it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Humans will just fuck it up.
Yeah, but not even fuck it up. It's just like compensated for it, you know.
Well, Ion has said that humans would just fuck it up.
So how does quantum, what was it, replicating it simultaneously change that? Ion was talking about, I just had it up. The simulation, Chad, I gotta pull it up again.
You mean with regard to what Linda was talking about with them tonight?
If the observer always fucks it up, and a quantum computer system is universal quantum simulators, that's what Ion brought up, where you're, Seth Lloyd.
Yeah.
I pulled up a link, or here, I'll drop the link in. It was describing his book, and I had just Googled words that Ion was saying about, I have to find it here now. Where you're simultaneously replicating hold on, let me read this a little bit. Having one quantum system simulate another directly so that the states of the simulator obey the same equations of motion as the states of the simulated system. And I might have said stimulated instead of simulated, but every time it's simulated.
Hmm.
So if the effect of the observer changes it every time, and you've created a simulator that is continually simulating the system, the original system, and the, I don't know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Does that?
It sounds like
replicating it.
No, it just, when Linda and Chad were speaking, Ian, about the quantum field or the whole quantum aspect, it reminds me of some things that I'm seeing. Because I when I said last session, I said, Ian, I'm probably going to wrap up my chemistry physics thing. And he said, well, you might want to look at the words of quarks that we said, you know. And now, and yeah, what I'm doing now is I'm looking through my notes and I'm like, holy shit. I'm saying holy shit because there's a lot of information they said to me over the years, and now I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, yeah, there's something there. But the one thing that sticks is they said that, it's, you know, Ian, it's like, is it possible to go forward and backwards at the same time, or like, you know, both and, or the, you know, but they said to me, they said that quarks, we won't need quarks when we run out of time.
Yeah.
You know, but then there's some other things that I saw last night that I can't recall right off, but I'm like, that's contradictory of what they just said there. So I'm like, okay, there's something going on with the quarks. Remember, there's a quark. They told me when I was engaging them, because, you know, when they say things to me, they say so many embeds, and, you know, my ears ring for this one, but I miss this. So when I go back and listen, and now I'm putting the words back, and I'm like, man. So what they said, though, and this is when they overrun, I think it was, I don't know, anyway, the time doesn't matter, but there is a quark, a new quark that's engaging lysine that's going to change the cell. Okay? So the quark has a lot to do with the ascension process. But then there is actually more quarks that are coming, that are already there, that we're going to be bumping into. But my thing that I'm looking through my notes, I'm like, okay, well, what the fuck happens to the quarks when we run out of time? Oh, now I remember what I read, is that they said, what was it? Here's this big another thing for you all to when you have deja vu, when you have something, deja vu, that's when you bumped into a quark. That's when you're engaging a quark.
I was just thinking that when you were saying, you were talking. Yep.
Deja vu, you bunch into a quark. But then there was something else, and I just had it, and that flipped up. So Maya must be fucking with me right now. Don't say it. Don't say it. So my mind is like, because I read it last night. What the fuck was that? Okay. Shit is gone. Somebody else talk. I'll try to remember it. But I'm looking at...
From my last, from my last payday talk with Ion, cloud bits are not qubits. Mm-hmm. Qubits as in the bits of a quantum computer. It's a quark collar. How fast does a quark, move? Mm-hmm. Faster than light. It already happened. Therefore, it shows every outcome because every outcome would be aligned. The watchers get fucked up when the timelines change. In other words, when things happen that weren't supposed to happen. There's no more caller except from the quark, because it knows every predicated outcome. So the quark knows every predicated outcome. That's why Ion says, oh, we've already seen this 10 million times.
Yeah.
So I saw the quark had in to that do with same the one,
in that same one, Chad, Ion said, neutrino is a size, quark is an experience.
Oh, yeah.
And there's also something I've read. Go ahead.
Tonight, Ion was talking about measuring it by its size. Hold on, let me go ahead, Bert, and I'll find that other, that.
See, because I'm, like I said, I'm putting my puzzle pieces together. And Chad, have you ever heard of the dot?
The dot that Ion has mentioned throughout.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is a really a strange phenomenon. The dot. The quark and the pea brain are outside of the dot. And the pea brain is really interesting. I'm summarizing my pea brain notes, and I'm like, man, there's some, because the pea brain is actually a quark.
Mm-hmm.
And then there also, was a... Go ahead.
Yeah, I was saying, I got that from, you mentioned it before.
No, I yeah, and then ion, I guess what I asked in the last session, that rings 13 and 14 evaporate and they become the pre-brain in the cell. So there's a quark aspect that we're engaging, but damn, I can't find that one. Maybe I'm just, because I'm looking at so much information now from my notes that things are like cross crisscross, but they are connected. Mm-hmm. But because there's something with the quark in the synovial fluid, I believe I read from responses I got from Ion. And we're changing.
Well, the overarching pattern that I see in the last payday about quarks is about that the quark has every potential outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, yeah, so tonight, Chad, you say that sounds like a shortcoming of the quantum physics world, and Ion said that's where size is measured by the number of variables.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask more about that, but they started to go on their rant, and I was going to talk about, well, there must be a lot of variables in the angel diagram, because you've got 14 degrees of freedom, so... To set the position on something that has even 1 degree of freedom. So if that's 1 degree of freedom, you have a variable there. But then for each degree of freedom you add, you're not adding one more variable. You're adding a lot more potential. Because they're like compounded on top of each other. So by the time you get to 14, you're dealing with a lot of variables to say, okay, this is the position of the whole angel diagram gyroscope here. There would be a lot of variables.
It's a combination of degrees.
Yeah. Of variables, of states.
As well. Yeah, of states.
Okay, I found it. Carolyn asked Ion, is the prebrain then, as you said, propped up by nerve endings and the pumping from the ventricles? And Ion says, okay, it's what synovial fluid would run to, and it's what spinal fluid would run from. And then Carolyn asked them, is the pea brain located in one area, or is it something that occurs throughout the body when things are met? When those criteria of the synovial fluid or spinal fluid are met, and I says, yeah, but you'll find it. You'll find it when you're trying to prove it will be in the right temporal lobe. So the pea brain is in the brain.
Find it to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so back to the dot thing. I had a session in 2009 where it was a few sessions where they mentioned dot, but probably the third time I heard them mention it, I'm like, okay, what is this dot? And they said they're referring to the pineal gland.
Mm.
The dot, because they kept saying the dot. And then finally they said the dot in your forehead. And I thought, like, the dot in my forehead, like, in the chakras, the third eye chakra. And then they said pineal gland.
Yeah, that's okay. It's funny. Every time I have a question about the pineal gland, because Ion, Chad, outlined for me a few moments ago, I won't use the time element, about the chi obfuscation formula that Carolyn asked a few sessions ago. But there's a long formula, and it has like 7 fucking million atoms of carbon in it, and boron, and so many million of boron in it. And then when I asked Ion where it would be, and they said it would be in the pineal gland.
Hmm.
I'll send you the formula email, but it's a long, long formula. And this has the cheese obfuscation formula, but it has a ton of carbon and a ton of boron.
God.
Yeah. So there's something really big about the pineal gland. So you just outline it with the dot. So there's a loop closed. I mean, it's really, it's,
You said, I mean, it's moment, fun to, you said that was a moment ago. You're not given the date on that one?
No, fuck that. It's, my whole, okay, my concept of time is fucked up. I'm like getting to the Bob quadrant of being timeless, because it's like, fuck, you know, I'm being exposed to things. You know, when I go to sleep, I'm doing something, but then I'll listen to archive, I look at a note, and it's like, everything is like, so I don't even like, okay, just say it's a moment.
Well, yeah, you just retrieved that for me from somewhere then, to use your terminology.
Can't tell the difference. I can't tell the difference if I'm listening to, if I heard something on a recording in 2016, 2011, or last year.
Right. It's,
but back to the pineal gland. I've heard Ion has gone on little mini rants, like they go a little blah, 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 and they say, when you ascend and activate your pineal gland. So I've heard that a bunch of times as being significant.
Mm-hmm.
They've talked about the size.
They've also said that the pineal gland will be calcified from the RNA droughts.
Calcified?
Yeah. It's just like funny, all the normal things that we've been trained in or read, Ion flips it on side. You know, they obsolesce it, and then when you retrieve it, it's something different. I mean, they like to say cancer's good.
Yeah.
And it's like, after getting exposed to this, how can you go and do something else? That's the thing with me. I'm like, man, I mean, you know, it's once you know.
Yeah, it's just, you end up sitting there listening to people talk, just constant talk shit that they believe.
it's just, and like Ion, you know, fucking, I'm like the canary in the mine as far as the meat sack, because I started engaging about muscles and qigong and, you know, all the things that I did for being a jock. And now all that's been obsolete, but then when I go back and retrieve it, it's like, you don't really have to do much. But stretch, I mean, and I'm in pain, but I mean, all you have to do is stretch and just be aware of your body, but not, you know, extreme like, you know, I used to. So, but it's, but they've obsolesced all that. Now I'm going to go back and retrieve it, like, okay, that's looked different, but doesn't really mean much as it used to.
So that's interesting, because that process of, I guess, let's just use words, language as an example.
Yeah.
So there'd be language that, like a word that means something today totally different than what it meant 100 years ago. So that process will change. Like, for example, like equality, that meant something different 200 years ago than it means now. So there's that process that just happens on a large scale. And I get the sense that Ion kind of takes that and accelerates the shit out of it. So when we're talking to Ion, we're going through a whole sped up version of that evolution and changing and retrieving and obsolescing words. So they turn that into a process instead of just being like carried by it like everyone else is over a long period. Ion knows how to take it and spin it and speed it up and make it work for you. If you're willing to let your concepts decrystallize.
Right.
So that they can be retrieved in new forms.
Mm-hmm. And that's
I got to come in here and say something. So that's good. Your conversation lasts 20 minutes. I think I'll excerpt that. It's a good summary of aspects of Ion. Make an item of it, out of it. Right?
Yeah. And just finish up real quick, Bob. Chad, and that point you just made is the problem that some people have. I won't name names, but everyone knows that are very book related, and they cannot loosen that the mortar in order to let something slip in from what Ion is in order to obsolesce it, and then we retrieve it. They get stuck on what they read in the book, and then Ion's stupid. They don't know what they're talking about. They talk bullshit, but really they're just trying to expand, you know, the knowing.
They're trying to fit it into their book.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that. That's exactly, yeah.
Okay, so Well, I've got the Trump book, but on the way, I realized I left a section out of the phase shifts in the tiny node chart. So I have pre-baby boomers, and that's LaRouche, McLuhan, Thompson, Croker, and Dobbs. Then I have baby boomers. That's what I left out. So who replaces LaRouche, and you'll notice he's starting to move more into the media slickness, is Rush Limbaugh. Who replaces McLuhan? Howard Stern. Who replaces William Irwin Thompson? Oprah Winfrey. Who replaces Croker is Max Headroom. And then who replaces Dobbs is Bob Marshall. Then you get the next two that you guys have, late baby boomers, early Generation X, late Generation X, and early Generation Y. So I got to make a more perfect chart. I've got to put these categories. I got to figure out how to fit the baby boomers in there on the dates. So you've got here 60 to 90, tetradic phase, and then you've got 91. So Rush Limbaugh, he starts around 91. So I got to figure out. Now, in my Trump book, I've got Android meme early phase and Android meme later phase.
Well, you've got pre-baby boomers starting in 1960.
Yeah.
But they're pre.
They probably. I know. The chart is around, it's based on Dobbs' reality, 1960 to 1990. You know, it ends in 1990, starts in 1960. That's the rounded off dates. Like LaRouche is 1960, McLuhan is 65, Thompson is 1970, Croker is 1980, and Dobbs is 1990. So that's how it begins. These first guys, the pre-baby boomers, they live a long time before the Android meme shows up, 1960. So got to figure out how to fit the baby boomers in there. I might have to have tetradic. In a way, the pre-baby boomers aren't in the tetradic phase, even though it's beginning to be developed. The LaRouche documents all that, the Tavistock Institute, in the 30s. So, anyway,
well,
that's just something.
Technically, you've got 30 years in the pre-baby boomers. And you have half of that in the other two, in late baby boomers and late Generation X.
Well, I got another 30 years.
Yeah, but split between two. You're trying to fit another one in there.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you resolve.
I'm glad I remembered that, because I was thinking Rush Limbaugh was in there somewheres. And,
yeah.
Then I went
and
went
Headroom.
2014 and found the chart, the proper one, without these new categories. So anyways, I haven't made that official yet. Got to figure out how to make it fit into what already happened. What was there something you guys – so, Chad, when you were talking about the formula, did you say that you succeeded in it, or what did you say?
The 4X formula?
Yeah.
I was saying that there were two occasions when I did a triangulation and I thought it was broken. I thought the formula was broken because in the first case it was like ion. I did a calculation to triangulate the euro 14 days from now, but it says that the euro would go down to zero. And it turns out that now ion has stood firm on that prediction that the euro will go down to zero. And I mean, the euro has lost like 15% in the last year. That's not good. So I was saying, even when I thought the formula wasn't working, in hindsight now it shows it did work, but it just, the time period wasn't accurate.
Oh, okay.
And then the other example was with back again in 2011 when I triangulated the pound and saw it going down like 35%. And then it did go down 35% like 90 days later because of the Brexit referendum. In both cases, I thought the formula was broken. It was right. It just didn't have the right timeline.
Why didn't it have the right timeline?
Because I found out later that I wasn't accounting for the effect of me triangulating it on the triangulation.
Well, the policy was never to tell anybody whether you or Nelson were successful. Because if you are successful, you're not to be known to be successful, because then they'll be watching for you. So you have to.
So I just stated publicly that that it wasn't successful, because if I had put money on both of those trades, they would have, I would have lost the money, because the timeline was wrong.
Yeah, but the you're not saying we don't know whether you completed it or not. You could have completed it. Now you're saying, yeah, no, I gave up. You know, you have to maintain your not answering ultimately how you did.
Yeah, but I think if anyone listens back to the recording of just now, they'll hear that I'm not saying that I made it work with enough accuracy to make money out of it.
Yeah, they'll which is what you have to say. Publicly, you have to say it didn't work.
Yeah.
If it actually works, you can't tell anybody. You remember that rule that Ian had?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to add this. Bert mentioned the new British Prime Minister. It's all calmed down. Did you guys hear Ian say a couple of weeks ago that a digital currency has been settled and agreed upon and it's coming in soon? Did you guys hear that?
Yes.
Right. Well, back in March this year, I saw a news clip and some strange guy was announcing in British Parliament that they were bringing in the digital currency in a couple of weeks, like at the end of March or something.
Yes, I saw
that. And, beg your pardon?
I saw that.
Yeah. So that came and went. Nothing happened at the end of March. No digital currency. And then the war occupied everybody's attention. And then people started complaining about food and that a little bit. Europe started rioting. Well, the guy who announced it in the after I announced the digital currency thing was going forward now, it was going to happen. And he said that before the present guy became prime minister. So when the present guy became prime minister, whatever he is, I said, oh, that's the guy who announced it back in March. And, you know, it was very odd. He said, we'll be bringing this in by the end of March. And they were just going to impose it on everybody. Well, they are going to impose it, and it's going to be done through him. So that's why everything is sort of cooled off, because they have agreed on the digital currency, whoever they are that agreed on it, and the guy who announced it versus him. So they pretended there was chaos to get him in.
Oh.
He's like a junior Bob. He announced it. He said it. It's going to happen. And then he just walked right into the prime minister's office because he said it. It's the power of the word. He's on the drops. So Ian said that that one will fail. Then there'll be another one. There'll be another one. They went three or four stages. And then that'll be it, they said. And then that's when the drops come in.
You mean that when you say they fail, you mean the digital currency is not the prime minister?
The digital currency will go for a while, then it won't. They'll have to do another one. And then it'll fuck up. Because it's still, in the end, built on nothing and on the flaw. So eventually it becomes obvious they can't do it. It's never going to work. So the drops become the currency.
And that's the end of the pound and the end of the dollar.
Yeah. Well, aren't they finished with digital currency?
Well, how do you value? Yeah. How do you replace the value of the pound with, as you're transitioning to digital currency? They're going to peg it in some way.
They could be knocked off in the second or third phase. They might not be in the first phase.
Right. They can't hold it up.
I was sort of thinking they would not be there for the last phase, which didn't work either, eventually.
Right, so Russia and China are bringing in their digital currency.
BRICS currency. Yeah. BRICS.
Yeah, that's what I said, that those two guys, somebody asked who's going to do it, and he said Putin and Xi Jinping. Now, they're not human.
Xi Jinping also?
Probably. And nobody is in the on the international level.
Yeah.
I think Ian's
been well, and that's a combined digital currency that goes across multiple countries. Whoever signs on to BRICS. So yeah, right now it's India and South Africa and China and Russia. And
they're all strong. You know, if Putin wins the war, he's strong from that. And those guys are strong. And the other predictions are Putin will rebuild the Soviet Union pretty well. Maybe not called Soviet Union, but he's going to get a lot of his countries back. And China, Ian said, but more under the mountain, will go from the Pacific Ocean all the way to Russia or Germany or something. China will be big. So maybe Russia and China emerge a bit.
Yes, and Ion talks about the NATO countries, that it all boils down to the 28 countries in NATO, and that's all outside of...
No, Ion said there'll be 28 countries. It's like 22 countries or something and 8 or 9, 20 countries and 8 or 9 empires, corporate empires. That's what I understand is the 28. Okay? So
and
you don't know
eight or
who,
nine corporate empires. Yeah.
So it's a giant consolidation.
Yeah. And, we'd be one of the empires, not a country. We wouldn't be part of countries, I don't think.
Bob, did you say that the new prime minister's on the drops?
Of what country?
UK.
No, I was just joking. He announced it. Hey, it's going to happen 2 weeks, and then he had to wait eight months, and then he was in charge. So he did a Bob thing. He's a junior Bob. He said, I'll announce it, and you watch. It'll happen. He might have done that.
Okay.
But it was very strange when he said it, saying it's going to come in 2 weeks, and you saw that. Somebody here said they saw it.
Yeah,
and there's no talk about it, and how could it happen? Who'd accept it? But it didn't happen. But then he got in the position to do it, based on what Ian said the other day, that there's going to be a digital currency that's been settled on.
Okay, that's the thing I've been thinking about, and maybe this is just an example, but if BRICS creates a digital currency that's combines the currencies of multiple countries, then you can't look at the value the current value of those currencies against the dollar and the pound. Because now it's an entirely new, different type of currency that isn't, you can't value it against, you can't compare it against the old ones. So that's how the old ones become obsolete, maybe. Is with bringing in the new digital currencies that in an already compromised currency exchange value, the value of the current currency exchange is undefinable right now, is unpredictable.
Yeah, but see, you're trying to put reason onto it. Ian says there's so many factors involved right now, perfect storm, that it's very hard to say what's happening or what's going to win or what's going to be resolved. So I wouldn't rely on any model that it would still be here.
Yeah. Or
after the dust settles in the next 6 months or something.
There I go, trying to figure it out again.
Yeah.
We're not here to figure it out.
No. It just... bask in the victory that you've arrived and are ascending with the products.
The thing about the BRICS currency is they're going to peg it to the value of minerals that they have, that those countries have all the mineral, those minerals, and that those countries can produce more of. So it's just another version of having the printing machine for money. But this time they'll print more of the minerals that their currency is pegged to by mining them.
I know. You're assuming you know something.
We're just witnesses, Chad. The way of the true and God.
Riots. There could be incredible riots against this currency so that they never really get it in and then they give up. And some other naive person tries it.
You know what this whole era right now reminds me of? It reminds me of Mr. Robot. Remember that show?
Yeah.
A few years ago?
Yeah.
Because that was where first him and his terror gang deleted the whole financial record. And then there were different factions trying to bring in either their own version of a digital central bank currency or a Bitcoin kind of distributed one. So that was 2016, I think. That's when
Yeah.
2016. Yeah.
See, they were trying to think through based on what was knowable then in the old models, and they didn't see the Trump thing happening.
It was collapse the system.
Showed.
He figured out how to collapse the system.
But I think it was kind of accurate. They did mention Trump. There was one time when the Chinese people were sitting there looking at the television and Trump was on there and they said, okay, we have our man. And this is before Trump got into power, and they were suggesting in the show that Trump would get in there as a
Chinese guy.
A Chinese guy, yeah.
Yeah, see, they didn't see any positive thing about Trump, so they put him into a negative scenario. And,
true,
that's what they missed. So that leads to this book. So it's called Unshackled, The Dustbin of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So it's a small book. It's 122 pages, but it's 123 pages. That's pretty close, eh? 122 pages, a perfect number. So I'm going to go through the archetypes. So they have an introduction, index of entries. Then it said, Trump's like us, Access Hollywood, Donald is everywhere. Okay, let's see, index of entries. So I'm going to list the people. They're going to fit into this, they don't call it an archetype, but they're noticing a pattern. So here's who they indicate and they mention as aspects of the Trump phenomenon, prefiguring of Trump, in this alphabetical order. Adolf Hitler, Alex Jones, alt-right, Andy Warhol, Ann Coulter, The Apprentice, that was Trump's show, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Axl Rose, Barack Obama, Barry Goldwater, Benito Mussolini, Benjamin Horn, that's from Twin Peaks, Bernie Sanders, Biff Tannen, don't know who that is, Bill Kristol, Bill Maher, Bill McKay, Bob Roberts, that's a movie, 1990 or so, The Book of the Subgenius, Boris Johnson, BuzzFeed, Camille Paglia, Central Park Five. Those are the five kids that killed the jogger, and it turned out they didn't kill him, but Trump said they did. Trump got nailed on that one, unless they got off to make Trump look bad. I don't know. Charles Foster Kane, that's Rosebud. Charles Lindbergh, Charlie Sheen, Chauncey Gardner, he was in Being There. You know, the guy just watched TV. Only new TV reality. Chris Christie, he was a governor of New Jersey. Chris Matthews, Daniel Clamp, David Ferry, JFK assassin, David Letterman, David Putty, Don Imus, Don King, Don Rickles, Donald DeFries, he was one of the leader of the Patty Hearst SLA. Donald Trump's reading list, that's one of the entries. Douglas MacArthur, Dr. Strangelove, The Drudge Report, Elvis Presley, F. Lee Bailey, Father Charles E. Coughlin. He was a LaRouche character in World War II. Some guy had a big radio audience, a conspiracy, Alex Jones kind of guy. Fox News, Frank Underwood, that was Kevin Spacey and the corrupt politician. What was that called? The cast?
House of Cards.
House of Cards, right. Frank Underwood. Frank Zappa, Fred Van Ackerman, Friedrich Nietzsche, Gawker, George Patton, George Steinbrenner, George Wallace, George Will, Glenn Beck, Gordon Gekko. He was the guy on Wall Street, the movie. The Great Gatsby, Greg Silson, Guy Grand, Hal Philip Walker, Hank Kingsley. Is that Nirvana's father? No. He's a comedian on the Larry Sanders Show. Yeah, you want to turn that off? Okay. Hank Kingsley, Henry Ford, Herman Cain. He's a guy who ran for president. Howard Beale, Howard Hughes, Howard Stern, Huey Long. The book, It Can't Happen Here. That's the phrase that Zappa says on Freakout. It's a novel, 1935 novel, about the rise of fascism in America. J. Billington Bulworth, J.R. Ewing, Jeb Bush, Jerry Springer, Jesse Ventura, Joan Rivers, Joe Cantwell, Joe McCarthy, Joe Wilson, The Joker, Julian Assange, Kanye West, Kevin of Seinfeld, Kim Kardashian, Larry King, Lex Luthor, Lonesome Rhodes. What's Lonesome Rhodes? A Face in the Crowd, 1957. It's interesting. Okay, this movie. 1957, Lonesome Rhodes. As numerous, that's Rhodes, like Rhodes Scholarship. As numerous commentators pointed out this election cycle, no Trump movie connection was made more often. There's a great deal of Trump to be found in Elia Kazan and Bud Schulberg's A Face in the Crowd, a feverish mix of such 50s phenomena as Joe McCarthy, television, Madison Avenue, Walter Winchell, and Elvis. Early on, Marcia Jeffries, played by Patricia Neal, handler and confidant of Lonesome Rhodes, played by Andy Griffith, a manipulative jailhouse country bumpkin savior to the funks in trouble. Marcia Jeffries, asked Lonesome, what's it like, quote, saying anything that comes into your head and being able to sway people like this? Lonesome, a nastier, more monstrous descendant of Frank Capra's John Doe, finds such power intoxicating, develops an addiction to it, but complains manipulatively that, quote, I just can't get my mouth around some of them things they want me to say. That's okay. Another advisor tells him, quote, telling off presidents and kings is the way to go. Although, quote, you have only one flaw, the way you've suddenly begun to shoot out of control. End of quote. Rhodes, a celebrity, gets more and more incandescent on no matter what he says, to a point where he announces, quote, I'm not just an entertainer, I'm an influence, a wielder of opinion, a force, unquote. It all comes to a spectacular end when Patricia Neal, the woman, Marcia, his girlfriend or whatever she is, it all comes to a spectacular end when Neal surreptitiously triggers the Emperor Has No Clothes moment that many Trump observers had been waiting for since day one. And finally got with the Access Hollywood tape, or at least it seemed so at first. You know, when he was talking about pussy, they thought that was the Emperor's No Clothes, he was gone. J. Billington Bulworth was the character that Warren Beatty played. Bulworth, that was a good movie. So, after Lonesome Rhodes, Lyndon LaRouche, Malcolm McLaren, that's British, the Manchurian Candidate, that's a movie, I think. And a book, 39, that the guy who wrote it wrote the foreword to Walter's Operation Mind Control. 1962, yeah, it seems to be a movie. So, Yeah, it's a film, Manchurian Candidate. Mark Levin, Marshall McLuhan, the McLaughlin Group. Most of you know most of these names, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Meg Abbott, Michelle Bachman, Mike Score, Miss Universe, Mitt Romney, Morning Joe, that's Scarborough, Morris Kessler, Morton Downey Jr., National Enquirer, Nate Silver. Nate Silver was the guy who badly predicted that Trump would lose in 2016. So he said who this guy is, Nate Silver. Yeah, some kind of pollster. So, Nigel Farage, Ian always talks about Nigel Farage, Newt Gingrich, Noah Cross, Norman Mailer, Orly Tights, P.T. Barnum, Paris Hilton, Pat Buchanan, Pat Paulson. McLuhan said he'd like to be considered as using the technique of Pat Paulson, who was a comedian and ran for president in the late 60s. Patrick Bateman, Paul Ryan, Putney Swope, that's a good movie, Rick Santelli, Rob Ford of Toronto, Ron and Rand Paul, Ronald Reagan, Roseanne Barr, Ross Perot, Rudy Giuliani, Rupert Pupkin, that's the guy in the Dobbs Quadrant movie, King of Comedy, yeah, 1980, yeah, Robert De Niro plays a fifth-rate stand-up comedian. And he takes over. Rush Limbaugh, Sam Kinison, Sarah Palin, Sean Hannity, The Silent Majority, The Simpsons, Spy, that's the magazine, Stephen Colbert, or Colbert, Steve Forbes, Ted Cruz, TMZ, Tony Soprano, The Truman Show, The Twilight Zone, Twitter, V for Vendetta, Vice, what's Vice?
Magazine.
Right. It's like the National Enquirer they have. Vice, Vladimir Putin, Wild Palms, World Wrestling Entertainment. That's the guy that Trump was a friend of, I think. Trump's connection to the world of professional...
Jim McMahon.
Yeah, does he name? Yeah, McMahon's. One billionaire shaving another billionaire's head, shrieks the announcer, while a gleefully smug Trump humiliates, emasculates his rival with an electric razor. You half expect to see red blood come spurting out of McMahon's skull. It's all a comic book-sized joke, of course, and no one watching would assume otherwise. But if it's not Donald Trump at his most queasily authentic, it does at least provide yet another eye-opening glimpse into how he tactically did away with 16 Republican rivals. So these guys don't like Scott and Delio. They don't like Trump. But they're saying something interesting is happening there. And he says in his foreword that his thinking about Trump this way was based on listening to me and Neufeld talk. So I'm saying the book comes from me in a way. World Wrestling Entertainment. You can't always get what you want. What's that, a Rolling Stone song? Yeah, Rolling Stone song. And then it has... you got 30 years of Doonesbury on Trump, page 63. It's Yuga, you know, huge. So this, I guess, G.B. Trudeau's Doonesbury did a lot of comments on Trump through the years, 30 years of it. So now, can you see, it's actually, this covers a lot of the Android meme era, or even going back to the 30s and 40s, most of the 20th century, characters from way back and more recent, can you see the archetype of fuck you kind of thing in these characters?
Many of them, yeah.
Many, yeah. I couldn't see it in Mitt Romney, though.
Let's see what he says about Mitt Romney. Page 81. So, you know, you go through the book and all these names, they all have a little explanation. Mm. So Mitt Romney, the 2012 Republican nominee inserted himself squarely into this year's election, 2016, when, speaking at something called the Hinckley Institute in March, one of the more awkward visuals of the campaign, he became the biggest name up to that point to break definitively with Trump. Romney said, "Let me put it plainly. If we Republicans choose Donald Trump as our nominee, the prospects for a safe and prosperous future are greatly diminished." Unquote. He also helped spearhead the Never Trump effort to maneuver someone else into the nomination, and may even have been angling for the spot himself. It was also hush-hush and ultimately futile. It was rather hard to tell. What he was doing for himself. In any event, it was 4 years earlier that Trump's debt to Romney was really struck. The 2012 election was, most Republicans believed, and most indicators seemed to confirm, there for the taking. The economy was still in slow recovery, Obama's approval rating was still consistently below 50%, and the presidency of George W. Bush was maybe finally in the rearview mirror. There was also an unspoken undercurrent of, quote, "Okay, we gave the black guy a chance, now let's move on." End of bracket. Nominate the right candidate, nominate someone who will first do no harm, and we win. So the big money and eventually Republican voters, albeit reluctantly after an unexpectedly schizophrenic primary season, lined up behind Romney. When he lost, because of a lackluster campaign, because of gaffes, the not-so-private 47% speech, because of demographics, and because he was Mitt Romney, the losing side was stunned, angry, and in poker parlance, all primed to go full tilt next time. In 2015, in the early months of the Republican nominating contest, first do no harm was completely off the table, something most political commentators were slow to pick up on. So the failure of Mitt Romney laid the groundwork for revenge via Trump. So it's very interesting reading all the different things. Also shows you all the different, just a good inventory of a lot of famous things, and they're just touching the tip, the ring of the black hole. There's so many people, but there's a lot with this individualistic streak against the crowd. So I think that's what Trump represents, bringing back again. Right?
Well, then he found that Trump chose the perfect foil then, or perfect enemy in China, because China is like total collectivism.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I wanted to end on that point. I recommend you all get the book. It's a good inventory of your life. So many things in there were part of your media existence, your TV body. And the back, the Heaven Reviews. Nope. Very obscure book, no reviews. Or no quotes that they could use. So, are we finished?
Bob, what book is this?
It's called Unshackled. Subtitled, The Dustbin of Donald Trump. So, you know, that's the dust of the Android meme. It's the whole Trump thing is, you know, interesting, flimsy, yet it's all that the Android meme or tech body's got to work with. Or the Android meme, an after image of it, while the tech body's doing all this other stuff that no one would believe.
Dust, I mean, that's a... When you say dust, are you talking about the noise?
No, they say dust. You know, dirt. The dustbin of Donald Trump. Sort of like what the teleology. He's what everything was leading towards. And everything anticipating him is now dust.
Uh-huh.
So on the cover... On the cover They have a pile of hardcovers. At the bottom, it says, The Selling of the President, 1968. Philip Roth has booked The Plot Against America. Mm-hmm. Stephen King's Dead Zone. The book Wild Palms. Two volumes of that. Andy Warhol's Diaries. Something called Crazy Town. And who that's by. Something, a novel called Nashville. And James Reardon's something called Stone. And Nate Silver.
Who are these people?
And our famous authors, famous personalities. Nate Silver is a pollster. He wrote a book, The Signal and the Noise. Then on the side, the novelization of Robert Redford's The Candidate. Something like Fox, but I can't, it says Fox, maybe Fox News. Dr. Strangelove, that novel, or movie script, and then American Psycho. American Psycho is that Brett Ellis, right? He was a famous novel, late 80s, early 90s. So,
right.
So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. 15 books, but one of them is repeated, so it's 14 books. And that's the end point. That's the Croker number. That's the end of the Android meme.
The end?
Yeah. That's the end of the Croker. Then you go into the Dobbs quadrant. Happy days are here again. Everybody goes into ecstasy.